I'm Nisha Pahuja. I am the director of the documentary film To Kill a Tiger, which is currently streaming on Netflix. And you are listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, we share a conversation with the award-winning filmmaker, Nisha Pahuja. Stay tuned. So I've been grateful to share some conversations with some amazing guests, but in the end, it all shines even brighter with you listening and expressing and building community. So thank you so much for sharing it with your friends and rating and reviewing and following along wherever you're catching this right now. It means a lot and I'm quite grateful. So no matter who we are, trying to capture an event and display it as a story, especially without judgment, is an absolutely fine needle to thread. Now, because everything for me somehow relates back to fifth grade, it's kind of like creating a shoebox diorama of a historical scene and determining what you want to display in telling your story while trying to be thorough and complete and especially thoughtful about the humanity of each person involved. Now, for award-winning documentary filmmaker Nisha Pahuja, threading that needle and executing holistic storytelling has been central to her work. She was born in Delhi and grew up in Canada, and her film career has successfully addressed a variety of themes, with a strong spotlight on human rights issues. In 2015, she won the Amnesty International Media Award for Canadian Journalism after making a short film about the Delhi bus gang rape for Global News. In the years that followed, she'd been exploring issues in India of gender justice and sensitization in the context of violence against women, coordinating and working with the Shri Jan Foundation in Jharkhand. Serendipitously, she came into contact with Ranjit, the father of a 13-year-old girl, Kiran, who'd been raped in a rural village. The story of Ranjit's uphill battle to find justice for his daughter and fight both the deep-rooted systems of tribal society and the structural pervasive toxic masculinity are the focus of Nisha's Academy Award-nominated film, To Kill a Tiger. The film, which was many years in the making, is both an incredible human story and an important call to action everywhere, but especially in India, where a rape is reported every 20 minutes and education in all areas is desperately needed. And it's so compelling for this film to be a vehicle of that education because for Nisha, her initial vision has thankfully blossomed into a movement built for impact, winning many awards, garnering a lot of attention and backing, and streaming worldwide on Netflix. Seriously, I would run, not walk, to please go and watch this incredibly powerful and moving film. So it was terrific to catch up with Nisha and chat about it all, from how she's navigated developing relationships with Ranjit's family, to thinking about justice and tackling our own histories and creating change. But I started by asking her if she's recovered from the aftermath of the Oscar experience, and if for her, it was sort of a joyful tornado.
Yeah, it was. It was such a whirlwind. It was so crazy. I feel like I'm still probably recovering from it.
Processing, sure.
Yeah, still processing, still recovering, still trying to catch up on sleep, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, for us, like one of the key reasons for us to pursue an awards campaign, because, you know, we didn't have any money, right? We didn't,
yeah.
We really went against the grain here in terms of the normal, you know, the studio spends the money or the streamer spends the money. We didn't have the money. We just had this desire to take this film and ensure that it was recognized and seen because we wanted to have impact with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, what better way to have impact in terms of an issue than getting it in front of a global audience and getting this kind of press that we managed to get. So I think in that respect, obviously it was a great success.
Yeah. You
know? Not because
yeah,
we were nominated and also we ended up being on Netflix.
Yeah.
And you know, we're getting incredible feedback from people around the world who are watching the film on Netflix. So you know, couldn't have hoped for better.
Right, anyway. Right. No, amazing. And I think, you know, garnering more EPs and getting a lot of, in a way, kind of building community around it.
Yeah.
I'm curious about one thing. Does a process like that ever allow for the work to lose its intimacy of being that kind of bootstrapped small project that you had imagined and grown and came with many surprises and twists and now develops into something of a movement, if you will?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does that ever, I wouldn't say worry you, because it's of course something that's a goal.
Yeah.
But do you ever feel like, wow, boy, this baby has changed at all?
No, I don't. And I'll tell you why. I think it's because the impact piece was always sort of central to this.
Yeah.
And what kept all of us going, you know, like the team of EPs, not just the celebrity EPs, but also the EPs who were funding this, right?
Yeah.
Who were funding our campaign. And this group of women, there were about 10 women that were working on this pretty much kind of 24/7. What was driving us was always a belief in the film and the importance of the story. Mm. It's like we knew something that the market didn't understand.
Yeah. You know?
We knew the value. We understood the value of this film in terms of how it could create change.
Right.
So it never, that thing at the heart that was driving us,
yeah,
it never went away. And you know, also, I'm not a sort of a young filmmaker, right? I've been at this for a while.
Yeah.
And I think that also helps. It keeps everything in perspective.
Sure.
You know, it's sort of like, you know what the real point of what you're doing is, and you
right,
hang on to that, right? Because the idea of an Oscar or an Academy Award, of course it's wonderful, but you also know that next year,
right,
there's going to be a whole,
right,
other crop,
yeah,
of films, you know? So that's not, you know, there is a value to it, of course, but for me, what was important was there's a deeper value. There's another value. And that was the
yeah,
one that was sort of guiding,
right,
guiding us.
You mentioned that, right? I mean, these cycles come and go, and awards are wonderful accelerators for impact, but
yeah,
they keep sort of the true nature of the work is still intact, and it's the same. For you, in, like you said, this is not your first go around, and I'm curious, particularly for this film and in reflecting on it, what you maybe have to unlearn as a filmmaker to direct this particular project?
Probably not trusting my instincts. I think that's
right,
what this film taught me. That actually all of us, you know, have really good instincts, and we should follow. There's a truth that our body is trying to tell us, and we should actually listen to that. We should listen to that truth. And so I was constantly going against my instincts. You know, that was probably part of the reason the film took as long as it took, right? Because I was going against my instincts. And then the whole process was coming back to what I kind of instinctively already knew.
Was, and or at least relearn how to trust yourself, right? Because, I mean, if it was just a lot of,
yeah,
self-doubt and thinking, was that a, you know, having made,
yeah,
films previously and worked and collaborated with others, was that a relative surprise to you? I mean, especially in thinking about how this evolved and particularly how it informs now how you make your subsequent films.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe I've always trusted my instincts in the field, right? Like when you're filming and when you're shooting, I've always trusted those instincts in terms of, you know, how to put a story together,
yeah,
what's important, what kinds of questions to ask in an interview, what the approach should be. That I've always trusted. I think what I didn't trust necessarily was myself in the edit room. And with this, I really trusted myself in the edit room.
You know, I was sharing that I have to build trust with people every 15 minutes. And I imagine that your trust building with this family was very, very different. you know, obviously. And I know that you'd been working with the Shri Jen Foundation and exploring other themes of gender sensitization. And then, if I'm not mistaken, had met Ranjith, and this sort of unfolded in a way serendipitously.
Yep.
I'm curious about one way, the process in which you were building trust with Ranjith and Kiran and their family, especially with so many complex layers, how that evolved. Was it something that was just literally iterative and patience and building a relationship over time? Or were there some critical kind of lock and key moments that you identified there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say usually when you're making a documentary, you spend time seeking out your participants and people who are going to be part of it. You spend time with them off camera. You do a little bit of filming on camera just to get them comfortable with the process of being filmed. So that intimacy actually is the foundation of the film. And then it kind of deepens and it evolves. And, you know, there's a really deep kind of friendship. Inevitably, there's a very deep friendship that develops with the people that you film with. In most cases, not all cases, but in most cases it does. And with this family, it was the complete, it was the opposite. There was no time, like I literally, the first time I met the family is with a camera in my hand, because I was following, you know, the activist who was going to meet them to talk about how they could support, how the Shri Jen Foundation could support their case. So that was literally the first time I was meeting Ranjit and his family with a camera. And so that intimacy, it was, that process was kind of inverted, right? And I had to gain their trust as we were also filming with them.
And I think your first meeting was just very, very soon after the initial traumatic event, right?
Literally days after, and with a camera, you know, I mean, literally it was just, we walked in and we asked if we could film and they said yes. So.
I know that at least this is not your first dissection of sexual violence and exploration of that, and certainly not your first film even exploring the systemic forces that are kind of associated with some of those themes, especially against women. How do you think your storytelling now has kind of further informed you, especially after that kind of an experience with this family, about what the word justice means, and, you know, perhaps what it should mean aspirationally, and perhaps how it evolves, especially in reality?
You know, I'll tell you something. I think, obviously what the family was pursuing and their need to pursue justice in terms of the courts was critical. And I was fully in support of that. And also fully in support of, you know, any decision that they made, like even if they decided that they didn't want to pursue justice, you know, we would have been in support of that as well, because the pressure was so astronomical. I think what I understood, and I've always felt this, right? Because I'm a really big fan of Bryan Stevenson and some of the things that Bryan Stevenson espouses, notably, like, you know, we are all more than the worst thing we've ever done.
Yeah.
I really believe that. And I did not look at those men as monsters or aberrations or, you know, people who deserve to be punished. There was no vindictiveness on my part, right? Because I saw them as products of a culture and a society and something that we have created. And so I feel very much that justice and education have to go hand in hand. You know, I just found out, and I have to check the stat, but I think 25 in India, like 25% of offenders, of sexual offenders, who 25% of them will reoffend.
Yeah,
that's a huge amount. And so, you know, it really makes you think, like, justice can only go so far, right? Punishment can only go so far. It's not going to solve the issue, right?
Yeah.
So it is important, like the law is important, and And consequences, the idea that, you know, the law represents consequences, that's extremely important because, of course, it sure. acts as a deterrent. But it doesn't get at yeah. the heart of the issue. And until you get at the heart of the issue and until you start to raise your children in a different way, the issue isn't going to go away.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with filmmaker Nisha Pahuja. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, and you are listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tam France.
What's up, everyone? This is Anto Philip.
Hi, my name is Richa Morjani, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with Nisha Pahuja.
You know, the natural tendency is for people to look at things in very sort of black and white perspectives, right? And draw borders, and we forget about all the grays there. Have your experiences as a filmmaker now taught you specifically to avoid that?
Yes. Yes, that's an excellent question. And yes, absolutely. Not just my experiences as a filmmaker, but I would say my experiences in India specifically, because I have spent so much time in India, and it is an incredible place which forces you to confront your prejudices, the way you look at the world, the very simplistic way that you once formerly looked at the world. It forces you to confront things, right? It forces you to see the grays, as you say.
Yeah, there's just so much engagement that is thrust upon you and so in your face and so in front of you. And yet, so many corners that where things are hidden, and if you're not looking for them, or if you're not asking the right questions, or any questions at all for that matter, they can escape you as well. You mentioned something about earlier about how much of a team effort this was, right? I mean, there's so many stakeholders, whether they were on your team or even within this family, of course, you know, the foundation you were working with as well. I wanted to know that did making this film at all change your approach to being a leader of a team? Perhaps how this actually changed, or for that matter, reaffirmed some of the things that you do in leading a team?
That's a really good question, and I've been thinking about that a lot, and actually was just talking about it with a friend of mine yesterday. And you know, I think I'm still learning. And I'm still learning how to do it effectively. And part of it is that as documentary filmmakers, we are so used, and I think it's two things. I think it's as doc filmmakers and as women, we are so used to carrying these huge loads and these huge burdens. And I tend to do so much by myself, like so much heavy lifting by myself, you know. So in the field, like when we were shooting the film, I was doing everything, you know. I was producing,
you've got all your hats on.
Totally, right? Like you're arranging travel, you know. You're dumping footage at night, right? You're doing absolute, and then you're directing. You're kind of like, okay, figuring out the film and figuring out the story, and it was really, really, and it continues to be really, really intense. So because I do so many things, because I wear so many hats, it's kind of hard for me to delegate, right? So I'm learning now. I'm teaching myself how to delegate better, the importance of delegating, both the importance of delegating and the importance of empowering those you delegate to carry things, you know.
Almost like having both the empathy for what that's like for your team around you, but empowering your team to kind of be extensions of who you are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and to make decisions. I would say that the one thing that I've probably done really well throughout is, you know, I am kind of driven by, in when I make a film, I'm sort of driven by perfection. And when I say perfection, I don't mean, yeah, oh, it's got to be perfect. It just has to be the absolute best version, sure, of the film that I know that we can make with right, the material that we have. So I'm really driven by that. And I surround myself with people who have the same goal. And it can be an exhausting process because my films tend to take a very long time. But I do surround myself with people who share that same kind of commitment and passion to the thing itself, you know, honoring the thing that you are creating. That's so important. My father used to always say, work is worship, work is worship. And I think,
yeah,
somewhere that's really
hit home.
Really does. Yeah, seeped into my brain. And then I think the other thing with this, you know, with this team of just the EPs that have come on board to fund us, and then the women that were kind of supporting this and carrying this forward, I think it was being very clear that what we were doing was about impact. How do we use this film to create change, you know?
I was just going to say one thing. It's so fascinating to hear you say that, like, you know, look, everybody has to be focused around a central cause, and that the impact of what your story was going to help unfold later for people is really where the thrust of this came from. I'm curious for you now, mm-hmm, particularly in thinking about the subject material and thinking about your own experiences as well, just building relationships that particularly account for trauma, whether it's fresh or latent, mm-hmm, it has to, in a way, and we deal with this in the physician's office all the time, it has to, in a way, account for some kind of historical context, whether that's for an individual, whether it's for a family, whether it's for a community, whether it's for a structure in a society. Did this experience at all, and I'm imagining it did, but I don't want to assume, I mean, did it force you to explore this for yourself or your own family and your own community and your own sort of navigation through what trauma means to you?
I don't know if it was this experience. I mean, I'm sure it's figured, you know, in the negotiating, yeah, and the navigating of this. I think it's probably just a function of, it's, you know, like our lives are kind of, they're sort of a collection of yeah, many experiences and moments, and these moments build. They're building, right? Like they're kind of stepping stones and they're building blocks. So I wouldn't necessarily say it was just this. I'm sure it's just been the journey of my life and the trajectory of my life that's gotten me here. And I'm sure the next film will create other things that I'm, yeah, that I'm thinking about. But yes, I have been feeling that in some way what we're all doing and what we bring to the table in all of our relationships are, yeah, our childhoods and the things that kind of really shaped our physiological brains and our emotional, you know, and our emotional brains. And that's what we're unlearning, right? That's the, it's almost like a process of really understanding the essence of who you are and the truth of who you are, you know? So I think all of us are connected in terms of that journey and that process.
What you say is so true, where we're just constantly unpacking and repacking and taking what our childhoods and our ongoing, yeah, experiences are. And yet a big part of what humans do is they put up barriers and boundaries and walls around themselves. And I'm curious, did you ever, you know, naturally and for that matter, understandably, feel like there were also boundaries and places of respect as far as risk and safety for this family in filming and sharing? Were there lessons or even valuable sort of takeaways about placing guardrails, especially when we're living in an information era where, I mean, people, yeah, are just hungry for art and, you know, media, especially in global markets, that, you know, to push those boundaries, and where the acceptability of boundaries perhaps, you know, seems to get pushed or blurred all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, you know, the way we approached the filming, where we had the camera, you know, it was, I say to people that it was probably as difficult for me to film with her, especially the survivor. I sometimes feel it was more difficult for me to film with her than it was for her being filmed. Because, you know, I had never filmed with a survivor before, and I'd never filmed, especially with a child survivor. It was the first time. So there were a few things that we did. Like, you know, initially when we were going to be filming with her, we were actually going to film with her in a way that was kind of where we wouldn't see her face. That was the idea. And we changed that approach really quickly because that felt like we were messaging to her that she had done something wrong. And that's why we weren't showing her. That's why we were filming her differently than sure. We were filming everyone else. You know, we were going to just blur her or find a way to hide her identity in post-production. That was always the idea. And then, of course, you know the story. I mean, she became of age. She saw the film and she decided she wanted to come forward. So, which is incredible. And we're, you know, she's been doing Q&As. Like, she did amazing. A Q&A in Los Angeles. It's amazing. She did Q&As right. in the UK with her dad. Her family is so supportive, you know, and she herself wants to talk, which is amazing. But it was a really difficult thing for me, not the other crew members, but for me to come to terms with, and probably because I was a Westerner, you know, and they had been around these kinds of situations
right.
in the past, right? The other people from our team, or most of them had. I think the other, for me, just in terms of practically some of the steps that I had taken, one was the master interview that we did with her. Some of the filming that we did with her that's in the film was actually done after the trial was over, right? And we inserted it. But it was a very deliberate decision to not re-traumatize, not to talk to her about
of course.
What had happened, what she'd gone through. You know, it was just, we're not going to, there's no way we're going to go here, right? And we'll do an interview. We'll interview her after everything is over. And that was such a powerful interview. I can't even tell you how incredible that moment was. And during the interview itself, at one point, I sensed that she really wanted to talk, right? I could feel it. And so I asked the crew to leave. So it was just she and I, you know, for the majority of that interview, it was just me and her in the room, and the camera was just locked, you know, in one position. Yeah, it was a very, very powerful interview. Because I knew it was, for her, an unburdening. She didn't really have that opportunity to express what she had gone through.
I wonder right? if that, so that liberation, it was... in a way, for both of you, especially during that very, very powerful kind of, you know, single person-to-person moment, if anything, it feels like that really does unlock those boundaries, and it takes down some of those walls. But you know, the viewership of that is perhaps, you know, a little bit different, right? Like that speaks to more introducing themselves, and in fact, you're inviting people in to share that moment, at least what you present of it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, with that particular interview, and this is something, you know, that I learned many, many years ago from a documentary filmmaker who I really respect and I worked with for several years as a researcher. His name is John Walker. And it was this idea that as a filmmaker, you have to reveal as much of yourself as you expect from your subjects. You also have to share, because it cannot be an extractive relationship. It has to be it has to be a friendship. And friendship is rooted in a mutual kind of unguardedness and unveiling, right? And so in that interview, I mean, I've done it throughout, but, you know, in that interview, particularly with her, I talked about a number of things, you know? And so I think that helped her in some ways, you know? So, yeah.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with filmmaker Nisha Pahuja. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, this is Vidya Balan, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi, guys, I'm Indra Nui.
Hi, this is Farhan Akhtar.
Hi, this is Madhuri Dixit, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Hi there, I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with filmmaker Nisha Pahuja.
I'm curious, you mentioned, of course, like for you, this was slightly different being a Westerner and thinking of your own kind of backstory as compared to maybe some of the others who were with you on your team. Did you yourself at all feel uniquely positioned in making To Kill a Tiger, but particularly as a diasporic Indian?
No, not at all. No, what I felt and it evolved, right? But what I felt, like it grew, right? Is over the course of making the film, the importance of having a local crew, the importance of having people who live in that culture, who understand that world, who've experienced, you know, who've filmed in villages before, right? Who understand those kinds of dynamics. I felt really, really fortunate. I felt like they were teaching me, you know, very much. I think that I have a particular kind of way of looking at things, which is extremely non-judgmental. I'm somebody who tries to understand as opposed to somebody who makes a judgment, you know. I've become that person. I wasn't always that person. I've become that person. So I think I bring that to my filmmaking, you know, and I think that's something that characterizes the work that I do. But I also really, really, on this particular project, really recognized the importance of my team.
And being someone who's born in New Delhi, then grew up in Toronto, because that was the lens you were coming from, because You're, as you mentioned, you're not making a judgment. You're really learning and understanding. And that was the footprint you were trying to take. Does that speak in a way to the universality of the message later? Because, you know, in a way, you're not an Indian filmmaker here, right? You were someone as a diasporic Indian person coming in and, in fact, learning and understanding. And now sharing a story that really, you know, is agnostic in a way to who you are and who she was.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a function. I think that's also, you know, the universality of it is also a function of the story itself, and you know what it was that this family went through, right? And this the sense of the underdog, the kind of the vulnerable person taking on the system and winning, right? And of course, a father's love for his child. I mean, all of those themes are universal. The struggle for justice.
And speaking of trying to buck the odds, if you will, and what vulnerability means, you know, I imagine that all of your films have been additive, right? You've been making films that really speak to those who are oppressed or marginalized or taking vulnerable themes and trying to, I wouldn't say expose them, but to really magnify and shine a light on them. How do you hope to, you know, when you first set out, and we were talking about this earlier, where you're trying to really think a little bit about gender, think a little bit about those roles, but how do you hope to accelerate that recalibration and that refocus and that reimagination of what male allyship and masculinity mean, but particularly in societal structures where power and control and forces are just simply constantly, you know, like a waterfall trying to secure what those roles have been for generations?
Well, on a practical level, you know, on a very practical level, there's an impact campaign that we're initiating with Equality Now and a number of other organizations where we will actually, you know, to me, the film itself is kind of it is sort of a call to action, right? Just that message and that idea of male allyship is just inherent in the film. It forces all of us, I think, to reflect, you know, on these issues and on these questions. Then there's also just in a very on a very practical level, there are the kinds of changes that we hope the film will make in terms of sensitizing systems that survivors have to navigate. There is reform that we hope to bring to laws in certain parts of the world. You know, in India, surprisingly, has incredibly robust rape laws, right? You know, that after the Delhi gang rape, it's the implementation that's the issue. So that's the kind of practical stuff where we're kind of hoping that people start to reflect and men start to reflect and they understand, and there's, you know, a whole impact piece that we're really excited about. But I would also say that there's something about this whole process, like change is a long game, and not one film, not one moment, not one case. It builds, you know. Mahinderji, who's the activist in the film, he said something once that's so beautiful. He said, "Boon boon se sagar banta hai," which is like, it takes many drops to make an ocean, you know. And change also comes at a price. There's a sacrifice to be made for change, right? Like someone has to pay the price, you know, in order to kind of change the status quo. And in this case, it's men. Men will have to make space, and they have been, you know, they're going to have to give up their power. And giving up power is a difficult thing for all of us, for any of us, whether we're talking about class, whether we're talking about gender, whether we're talking about nations. It's a difficult thing to give up power, but that is what is being demanded of us. And that process is slow. And part of it is a forcing from the outside, and a part of it is reflecting. Is a reflection that we all have to go through, either as individuals or as societies. But it's a long game, and it takes time, and you have to be patient. And that patience forces you, understanding that you have to be patient, understanding that change takes time. It forces you to be non-judgmental. It forces you to ask questions. It forces you to explore as opposed to demand angrily. We have to demand. We have to push. But you have to do it in a way that is compassionate. Otherwise, you just create enemies.
And I think, you know, you have to do it in a way that is with that long game in mind, right? There can be disruption in the immediate sense. But if perhaps the long goal of appreciation and understanding and, again, avoiding judgment is really focused on that change, then hopefully the long game is really what's out there. The quote that you mentioned about sort of drops, several drops making an ocean. I know that sometimes these topics for particularly viewers who may at first be exploring topics like this, you're shining lights, perhaps a spotlight on, you know, feelings here where your impact is change, but sometimes somebody might look at those topics and feel very hopeless, and they might feel futile, and they might feel like there is just really no, you know, end in sight. They might feel like they're boiling the ocean as opposed to really like trying to understand it. I'm curious if there are elements of this work that, in thinking of that long, long game, that particularly brought you optimism and joy and real, you know, feelings where, yes, I do have that. I can see that this is a small step in change.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, I would say, of course, her courage and her coming forward and her desire to show herself and her desire to speak is extraordinary. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's so powerful.
You know, the fact that she has this amazing support from her family, from her parents. And, you know, they had a journey with this film. They had a journey going through this process as well, right? I mean, it wasn't like they didn't have feelings of shame. It wasn't like they didn't feel judged. It wasn't like they were feeling, how are we going to recover from this? I mean, you know, Ranjith initially is motivated by his own male pride, right? His own kind of, I've got to do this to reclaim my masculinity. You know, that is initially what he was motivated by, as he says in the film. But he has a journey. He goes through an evolution. He comes to understand
because the process of going through this, and I think also having a crew forcing him to reflect, you know, just as you and I are having this conversation and it's forcing me to go inside and to look, right? That process was forcing him to explore himself, and he had an epiphany. He had a right. realization. He went from being ashamed to being so proud of his child and his family for what they had achieved. That is such a huge victory in and of itself.
And I'm imagining that those epiphanies, as they happen, for you to have a front row seat to some of that must have brought a lot of joy and happiness.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It was very emotional for all of us, you know.
In all the work that you've done, whether it's Bollywood Bound or like The World Before Her or any of the other projects that you've been a part of, if you had to think a little bit about people who are now getting introduced to your work for the first time, and if someone's watching one of your films, how do you hope to make them feel? And perhaps what are some of the questions you hope they're asking, particularly afterward?
I don't, you know, I really don't know, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't know. And I'll tell you why. Like, I have been reading comments on social media, like in terms of people's response to the film. And of course, they're, you know, by and large, extremely positive. But there's so much anger. There's so much, you know, there's anger targeted at this person and that person. And how dare they? And I wanted to punch the, you know, I wanted to go inside my TV screen and enact violence. And I just think, you know, that wasn't my intention at all, right? My intention, of course, is to just present things as they are and to... Now, I mean, I've evolved as a filmmaker, but over the last couple of films, I would say with The World Before Her and To Kill a Tiger, my intention really is to invite people to look at something in a very holistic way and to understand the complexity of things and, you know, to realize that we are all products of things that are beyond our control. And if that is the case, we have no right to judge. You know, we have to suspend judgment. We have to understand that people just are where they are, and that change is possible, but they just are where they are, and to not hate and to not judge. That is what I sort of espouse personally. Now, how people respond is also where they happen to be on their journey. And some people understand, some people see that very non-judgmental aspect of my filmmaking, and they respond to that very profoundly. And other people just, they listen to the words that maybe the villagers are speaking, and they're filled with rage.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, those perspectives don't anger me at all. I understand that they're unjust and they have to change, but I don't feel angry about what people are expressing. So I don't expect anything from audiences other than they have to make their own decisions, and whatever they feel about it comes from them. So,
well, I know that people who are getting introduced to your work for the first time or many times over, I know the overwhelming majority are appreciative and of course hungry for more to come, and hopefully more than anything else, appreciating your incredibly thoughtful approach. Nisha, thank you so much for sharing some time with us. This was really lovely.
Okay. And
I hope we can visit with you down the road.
For sure. Thank you so much for this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Nisha. And please check out To Kill a Tiger on Netflix and learn more at tokillatigerfilm.com. It's really no secret, and especially as Earth Day was just this last weekend, please be kind to the planet and to each other every single day. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.